Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hey, Reggie, what do you say? Want to do a podcast today? You got any other plans? At least for right now? For the next hour? Okay, well then, sit down and have a little fun. Okay? All right, my friend, get set in that other room. Get that trigger finger ready. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. I'll give you a podcast. Not but that. I'm a giving person. What can I say? I'm a giver today. So take, okay? All right, here we go. Star Smile Strong, episode 523. Put it in the book. And here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, while it's always important to listen to the podcast, I think it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends about it. Tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you always have been listening to this podcast from when it first started to it is till today, then, you know, once again, that's fantastic. But it's always good to also listen to some reruns. Hey, we've got some old podcasts for you, too. If you want to hear where we've been so you know where we're going, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and there they are, just sitting there waiting for you. Just scroll down and load more and enjoy some of the previous work that we've done while you're enjoying some of the current work that we're doing. Hey, we're still going strong. 10 years and counting. And sticking and counting, this is episode 523. So I told you just a little earlier there that this is now 10 years. We are into our 10th year. May 24th, 2016 was the 10th year anniversary of this podcast. And as I said, this is episode 523. And that just about works out, if you think about it, because I have not missed a week. So 520-some podcasts with leap years put in there. Look, what can I say? The proof is in the pudding. The numbers don't lie. And if you've been around since podcast one, thank you so much. If you've just been a recent listener, hey, glad to have you aboard. If you found us somewhere in the middle, that's just as good as well. As long as you are here right now, that's all that counts. If you've been there for a long time, hey, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the 10th anniversary in the next couple of weeks, but leading up to that, actually, I thought this was kind of an interesting thing. Because it sort of plays into the 10th anniversary of this podcast in that, Jim, how the heck did you get here? I've talked to, if you're a regular listener, you've listened, and I've always dropped little anecdotes and little stories about my past growing up, career-wise, whatever it is. So if you've been a regular listener and you have a pretty good memory, you have a somewhat good idea. I haven't gone into in-depth, perhaps, and some topics, but I certainly have touched upon a lot of the topics of my background, as I said, not only as a person, but as a professional broadcaster as well as a media member in my career for the last 40-some years. And so that's all, of course, in the effort to share with you. As I've said many times, this podcast, in my mind, is a dialogue between you and me. Didn't start that way, actually. And as I said, I'll talk a little bit more about the early days and the inception and the creative vision and the motivation for the podcast in the next couple of weeks or so as we settle in. Hey, what's the difference, right? Okay. Oh, Jim, you had this, that was your anniversary. Okay, and that anniversary is there, and it's 10 years and counting. As I've said many times, I always ascribe to the Walter Payton philosophy of when you get into the end zone, you don't need to have a big party and a big dance and a big celebration. You should act like you belong there, and you'll be back there again. And that's the way that I kind of look at it. But I certainly think it's worth commemorating, and I will do that. And I think this actually falls in, interestingly enough, with my plans of doing that. But yet this is something that is completely news to me, but sort of plays into that. So I figured, well, this is actually, the news itself is not fortunate, but the timing certainly is. And so I thought I would talk about this in terms of giving you a little insight into my background, how I got here, how did I get to the point of doing this podcast for 10 years and 523 episodes. It's always good to know a little bit about who you're conversing with. As I've said, that's the way I always look at this podcast. It's kind of a dialogue between you and me. Now, hopefully there's more than just you and me listening. I have no idea, really. But at least hopefully the sound of it and the feel of it is very personal and one-on-one, because that's the goal here. But I was just scrolling on the internet machine the other day, and I saw some surprising, disconcerting, and ultimately just kind of sad news. I read the news today, oh boy, you know? that's what it felt like, a day in the life, or almost like a day in the lifetime. I saw this little blurb. In fact, you know, in today's world, as I've said many times, you have to really be careful about whatever news you see. If you see a post on social media, don't forget, it's there to be provocative. It's there to lure you in to like it or to click on it or to view it, whatever the case may be. It's there to entice and tempt and get your attention. And sometimes it's completely fraudulent. But a lot of times you walk away believing it if you don't do your due diligence and look at other sources to back it up. The easiest way in today's world, because of the search engines we have, is that you see something on social media. Okay, first look at where it's coming from. Is this somewhat of a reliable source? And that's getting harder and harder to figure out in today's world when, I guess, legitimate, in quotes, media is very different than it was even 10 years ago, and certainly 20 or 30 years ago. The line has been blurred, unfortunately. But there are still some of those legacy medias that we can at least depend on. And so if you see a piece of news, you can read it, but then right away look at the source. Was it a shared by somebody, or are you reading the direct post? And then who's the post from? Is it a person? Is it a organization that you've ever heard of? Or is it something like a New York Times or New York Post or a Washington Post or Chicago Tribune or something with some kind of verifiable validity? And if you're still not sure, then the best way to do is to go to your search engine, whatever that may be, Google or whatever you might use, and go on there and, you know, type in the headline and see if it pops up anywhere else. And if it does, then something that might be a shared post from somebody still could be valid, but a lot of times it isn't. You can't really trust the average person to be vetting information. You shouldn't be believing information that comes from just anyone. And you certainly shouldn't be passing it along as truth. And then today, especially with AI, with it, with what they could do both visually, which is very believable, as well as just the written word, it's even more important now and more incumbent on us personally to take the personal responsibility to confirm what we're reading. Now, I know for the average person, that's not a natural knee-jerk reaction or a natural next reaction. But I think everybody needs to now become their own mini-editor, their mini-journalist. For me, it is second nature, because I've said many times I've been a member of the media and been trained in it for almost all of my career since I was in college. which plays to what I want to talk about today. But yeah, so you should always at least try to validate, verify, confirm what you read. Don't just read something online and share it or believe it. Go take that extra 2 seconds, go to whatever browser you use, type in that headline, and see if it pops up anywhere else online. And if it does, with a valid or at least a reliable source that you would recognize, like I said, mainly either a TV station that you know of or a newspaper that you know of or even a radio station, whatever it may be, but some valid media outlet, CNN.com or whatever you might listen to or watch, then at least you have a sense. If it's there, I don't know if all the details might be the same. You might want to look to see how that story compares to the one that you read, but at least you know the basic nugget of information is either true or false, something that you should either believe or disregard, something you can either, if you are interested in doing, pass on to other people verbally or to pass on with a post, share it, or something you should just say, okay, well, that's just another gossipy rumor mongering. As I said, the world has become sort of one big water cooler where all gossip is disseminated, and it's very hard these days to get a handle sometime on what the truth is when you've got billions of people all at the same water cooler telling, billions of different stories. So this is what I did. So I see this story on my Facebook page and I'm kind of shocked to read it. And so the first thing that I did was go back and validate it and say, let me go to someplace else and see, is this true? Because for me, it was kind of shocking and a little uncomfortable. And as I said, actually kind of sad. And what the news was that my college radio station at Elmhurst College, now called Elmhurst University here in the suburbs of Chicago, has closed. They did not renew or they canceled, I guess, their official FCC license. And the station has been around since 1962. So 64 years, that station has had a very long and proud history. And certainly from my standpoint, I spent 4 years on that radio station, even a little more. After I graduated, I was still on in the summer doing some few things. And I really, owe a great debt in the ability for me to be on that station for 4 years and kind of learn my craft. And the best way to do that, you always hear those stories about the 10,000 hours. And that is true to a great extent. And you have to put in your 10,000 hours to get good at something. And Lord knows, over the four years, I was on that radio station, I'm sure, at least 10,000 hours. I lived at that radio station. That radio station was the main reason I went to then Elmhurst College, now Elmhurst University. But the radio station call letters were WRSE, 88.7 FM. It was a small over-the-air station. It wasn't just a campus station. It did go, I think it maybe had maybe a 10 or 15 or 20-mile radius around that area. It was mostly out in the western suburbs around the Elmhurst area, emanating from the studio and the transmitter. At Elmhurst College, for a very small liberal arts college, private liberal arts college, long time. It's been around for more than 100 years, but it certainly isn't of the prominence of the ilk of other places. But to have a radio station there at a small liberal arts college. The fact of the matter is that several people who worked at that college in those 64 years did go on to local here in Chicago or even national prominence in the radio business. And some people who went to the school may have done some work there as well and have become, you know, international stars as well. Probably the most successful and known alumni of WRSE in Elmhurst, from Elmhurst College or Elmhurst University, is WXRT personality here in Chicago, Terry Hemmert. And she made no bones about that, that she went to this small liberal arts college and started getting her experience in radio. Patty Martin, who was a very successful program director nationally and here in the Chicago area, came from Elmhurst College as well. I think she may have even worked with Terry or been there at the same time. Another personality and alumni is a guy named Tom Tuber, who was also a national radio programmer. Most notably, he was at WMET back in the 70s and 80s here in Chicago as a program director. And that was when, if you're a radio head in the Chicago world, you'll remember the big the big battle between WLUP and WMET here in Chicago for a while in the late 70s and early 80s. They were the two big FM rock stations, and they really were battling. It was back then. There was a lot of time. There was a lot of competition between radio stations. Today, you know, radio is very diluted, and its impact is much less than it was. But back in those days, though, there was competition, and they played tricks on everybody, and people wanted to scoop each. It was very much like the old days of a newspaper, where there was big competition and who got this first and that. In the radio business between MET and LUP or the Loop, who played this song first, who was sponsoring the coolest concert, who was giving away the coolest contests, and really at the heart of it, who was playing the coolest music. And so no doubt that in the late 70s and early 80s, the rivalry between the Loop, WLUP, and WMET was fierce and fun if you were a radio listener and a music, rock music listener as well, of which I was both. I should mention that Patty Martin worked at several stations around the country, but most prominently, she was the program director at The Drive right here in Chicago. And she worked at XRT as well. And she worked around the country. But she was the music director at XRT, and she was also the program director at The Drive, which right now, I mean, she is not there anymore, but she certainly was a driving force in that, in establishing The Drive in its early days. And certainly that work can be seen in how The Drive now is one of the probably at times, sometimes the number one station in Chicago, playing a kind of a mix of classic rock and things like that. So it's very cool. And as I said before, very impressive. So you got Terry Hemmert at WXRT. You got Patty Martin, who was a program director at The Drive here in Chicago. You have Tom Tuber, who worked at several stations around the country, most prominently here in the Chicago area, at WMET. Dave Wills, if that name sounds familiar to you, if you were a sports fan, you'll know that Dave Wills was a sports reporter here in Chicago. I think he started working at an old... Back in the 80s, there was something called Sports Phone. This may sound like, some crazy thing, so out of date now when you talk about this type of thing. But there was something called Sports Phone in the days before the internet and all these different platforms. You literally, you would call up. I don't even know. Can you call time anymore? there was a phone number that you could call and it would have the correct time. You know, and that's how people check their watches. Now, I don't even know if that is even needed when you think about it, because we have our phones with us. It's hooked up to a satellite. There's no need, but we didn't have this technology before. I used to call time all the time. At the tone, the time will be 8:47 and 15 and 20 seconds. At the tone, the time will be 8:47 and 30 seconds. Beep. At the tone, the time will be 8:38. Exactly. Boop. The exactly was the best part. Because you know there was some woman who did that voice, and she said, exactly. I don't know if you can call time anymore. I used to know that phone number by heart. As I said several podcasts ago, we don't even know phone numbers anymore. But I knew the number for time. I would call. I'm such a stickler for time. I like to be on time. I'm always early. I subscribe to the adage: if I'm a half hour early, I'm almost late. That's the way I look at things. I always try my best to get there at least 10 to 15 minutes, if not earlier, just to be there on time. But yeah, Dave Wills was a sportscaster, and he started here in Chicago. I know he worked at WLUP and MVP. And I remember I had a brief for about a year and a half, 2 years. I had a weekend radio show on the old WMVP AM 1000, and I remember doing it was just one. It was on once a week. But I remember that I was doing my show, and Dave Wills was doing the sports, and I was like, Dave Wills, in fact, we were the same age, and I knew of him. I knew him. We didn't hang out, but I knew of him and knew him. I remember him being involved with the sports part of the school's, radio kind of thing. The radio station, as I said, WRC used to, at times broadcast the games and things. So I know he was into sports. But yeah, it was very cool to hear and actually work with Dave Wills. Sadly, and he rose certainly in his profession. Not only did he work here at WMVP and I believe at WMAQ, but then he wound up ultimately becoming the play-by-play announcer on radio for the Tampa Bay Rays. And he was there for several years and became very prominent. And he sadly passed away about maybe 3 years ago. He's only 58 years old, and he passed away. Very sad, but he certainly had a very successful career in sports journalism and sports broadcasting, Dave Wills. So he went to Elmhurst College. I've on this podcast, and you've heard me on WGN talk about one of my former partners at the station, a guy named Mick Kaler, who I've often spoke to on this podcast in the early days, and whenever I filled in on WGN, I would have Mick on. We were partners in many ways, not on a radio show itself. In college at WRC, but we were both there for a while. Mick was a couple years older than me, but we each had individual shows, but because of our shared interests in music and pop culture and things like that, and we would sit in every so often on each other's shows, but for the most part, our shows were individual. But we used to do a lot of outside projects, and we did a weekly newsletter. Thanks to WRSE, we used, through the radio station, we put out a weekly newsletter called Mick and Jim's Hucklebuck Update, which had about 2,000 or 3,000 people subscribing to it. And we had pins, and we did contests, and we did events, and we did different record hops and different events all through the western suburbs because of our popularity through this radio station. As I said, it didn't go far, but people listened, and enough for us to get a little actual following, which was pretty cool when you were about 21 or 20 years old or 18 when I started. It was pretty cool. And so Mick Kaler not only worked with as a radio producer with some of the biggest personalities in Chicago, most notably, he was a producer for Larry Lujack in the mid 80s and mid to late 80s before Larry retired. And then he went and worked with Robert Murphy on the old Q101, Murphy in the Morning. And he was his producer for several years. And he had a couple of different jobs at a couple of other radio stations before. Now he left full-time radio many years ago. But he certainly had a prominent career for a good 10 or 15 years as a producer on the producer side. But he also appeared on the
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Radio as a producer as well. For a small station, and of course there was me. I don't know what you consider my radio career. I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm certainly proud of the work that I've done, and certainly most proud of some of the people that I've gotten to work with over the years in terms of being a part of their shows or with them on some of the major radio stations here in Chicago, I had internships at WXRT. This is just pure radio. I worked with Charlie Meyerson and Neil Parker in the news division in the mornings. That was a part of the Terry Hemmert show. I didn't know Terry at all, but I sent her when I was in college. I sent her a letter and said, "Hey, you know, I'm an Elmhurst College student, and I'd love to. I lived literally four blocks away from WXRT in Chicago when it was still on in the Belmont." And central area near Belmont and Cicero. I lived three blocks away. Three or four blocks away. I used to wait across the street from XRT to take the bus to go to high school every day. Okay. So, XRT was, I remember when they put up the big antenna to really expand XRT's coverage area, there was people in our neighborhood going, "What the heck's going on there?" Because all of a sudden this giant tower went up. It's still there. You can't miss it. The station isn't out of there anymore. It's downtown now, XRT. But for many years, it was a small, independently owned station. I believe it was Dan Lee was the owner. And it was in this small, very unassuming building, one floor, small little building with this giant this giant transformer behind it. And the building is still there today. I believe even the XRT call letters are still on the outside. If you know the Chicago area at all, the Belmont Central, Belmont Cicero area, there's a high school called Foreman High School on Belmont. And XRT is pretty much kitty corner from Foreman High School. So it's right there. And as I said, so I was an XRT fan growing up, and I got a chance to be an internship there. I used to work in the news department, as I said before, with Charlie Meyerson, mainly during the morning show, writing the news reports for him. And at that time, Neil Parker was the news director. So I was at XRT. I worked at the old Bear, WCBR, in Arlington Heights. I had a weekend entertainment theater show there for a couple of years. And I also then worked later at both WMVP and The Loop as part of Gary Meyer's show when he had a solo show in 1994. After that, I worked for about two or three years after Gary was let go. I transitioned and worked with Kevin Matthews on AM 1000 for about two or three years before he was let go. I think he went to WLS FM for a while. I went there once or twice, but I didn't stay with Kevin. But I was on with Kevin for at least two or three years doing a weekly kind of show or report with him about, you know, every week I would do a, you know, an entertainment roundup with him. And that led to my own show, as I said before, on WMVP, AM 1000, which is now ESPN. And I did that show from like 97 to 98 for about a year before that station got sold to ESPN. Disney bought that station, and it became All Sports. But before that, I used to host a radio show, an entertainment show, all about movies and television and theater and music and you name it. Very similar to what I've always been doing. And then, of course, I hooked up with Gary Meyer again several years later after he broke up with Roe Khan. And Gary and I worked together for about 8 or 9 months at the old WCKG 105.9 FM. And we were there for about 7 or 8 months until that station got sold. Yes, that used to be the radio world, folks. That was the radio career. That was 2007, but it was a very popular show. It was doing very well. It's just that the station got sold nationally. And then Gary and I, of course, went to WGN in 2009, where we were there for almost 5 years, and we did very well. We started there in the middays from 10 to 2, and then we wound up getting the afternoon show. And we were there for almost 5 years. Our last show was in 2014. And then I've been doing fill-in work at WGN since then. And then in 2016, of course, I started doing this podcast. And I can trace that whole radio lineage back to WRSE-FM 88.7 in Elmhurst. As I said before, I put in the 10,000 hours. I lived at that station, and I did it with all the passion that I could muster. I wanted to be in on the radio ever since I was about 9 or 10 years old. I sort of said, wait a minute, that's kind of a cool job. And even before I realized it was a job, I was kind of doing it anyway. I would... I was a big hockey fan and baseball fan growing up, and I would go into my bathroom, I mean, in the bathroom in our house. It was just, you know, I was an only child, me and my mom and my dad, and I would go in the bathroom, and I would get the newspaper, and I would read the sports scores, and I did it in the bathroom because there was really good echo because of the shower and all that porcelain in the bathroom and the tiles all over. A lot of tiles out in back in the 70s, you know. But I used to sit in the bathroom and do like a sports show of reading the scores. And then I remember getting a Panasonic tape recorder and doing impersonations of different stars of the day and doing different things and always talking. So I guess it was in my blood. I guess I was destined to do it. I don't know if I've been successful at it or not. I've certainly given my all my effort to and tried my best, but a lot is, of course, a lot of luck and being there at the right time. As you can see, as I'm saying, stations, I'm proud of the fact that the work that I've always done has always been well received, but sadly, it's been, kind of cut short for reasons that really had nothing to do with the quality of the material. It was business decisions or behind the scene things. And but anyway, my point is that whatever talent I have in this, I developed it. I got my confidence. I was able to get on the air and see if I could do this and do it all the time. As I said before, I put in my 10,000 hours, and I really attribute whatever abilities I may have on the radio to the experience and the training and the fun that I had at WRSE-FM 88.7 FM, which used to be the college radio station at Elmhurst College, as I said, now Elmhurst University. It's hard for me to get used to saying that because it's been Elmhurst College for hundreds of years, or more than 100 years.
But now that it's been, you know, changed, and now it's a university. I'm not sure, you know, how that like happens. But it's been almost 6 years, and I think this July will be the 6th year it became a university. But it was, you know, it was founded initially back in the 1800s. And it became, it was first an academy, and then it was a junior college, and it became a full-time college, and now it's a university. And so, like I said, it's a very well-respected liberal arts college. And one reason that, a couple of reasons that I went there. Say, well, Jim, why didn't you go to some big college? You know, you wanted to go. I mean, the big thing is, you know, if you want to get into broadcasting, you go to Syracuse University. Apparently, that's the big, at least if you want to get into sports journalism, everybody goes to Syracuse University. What I really wanted to do, though, and the reason I went to Elmhurst College or Elmhurst University was because it had this radio station. And I looked into going, and I wanted to stay in Chicago. And so I had some nice internships, you know, later on in the Chicago area. But I was happy living at home. I had a part-time job. I wasn't looking to go away. I had a close circle of friends. A lot of my friends didn't go away. A lot of people didn't go away back in those days. Now everybody goes away to college. It wasn't that way before, you know, 35, 40 years ago. It was just a whole different mindset, you know, at least in my world. But the reason that I went to Elmhurst was because I was looking around at some of the bigger, more prominent name schools that had radio stations like Northwestern or DePaul or Loyola at the time. Obviously, Columbia College, which is a, especially back then, that was like where if you wanted to get into broadcasting, Columbia, that was all they did. They didn't really even have a curriculum for other things. It was mostly all about broadcasting or the media. I felt I wanted an education as well. I just didn't want to go into and learn just broadcasting. I did want to get a well-rounded education in addition to working at the radio station. Because in my view, I felt if you're going to be a good radio personality or a good member of the media, I mean, I didn't know what I exactly wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to do something on the radio. But I mean, I was a big news junkie. So perhaps, I was writing the news for WXRT when I was, when I was 21 years old as an intern. And I also had an internship at Channel 2 here in Chicago in the news department. Of Channel 2, and I was working, I was doing the work of people that worked there full time. I mean, believe me, I used to work 13, 14 hour days. I asked for a day off one time. I was there for 6 months. I asked for a day off one time, and they said, "We can't give it to you." So I was kind of flattered that they relied on me, and I was doing a good job. But I mean, that was not just like, oh, you know, file something or go get me some coffee. No. I was doing some real work. But anyway, before I got to college as a teenager, as we're getting ready to go to colleges, I knew that I wanted to at least try to see. I mean, that's what your early part of your life and your early part of career is all about. You can is finding whatever that passion of yours might be and seeing if there are opportunities for you to at least try it in some way, even on the most basic level. Just to see, A, do you really like it? You know, from the outside looking in, everything looks glamorous. But when you really do it, is this something where you feel comfortable? And not only is it something that you want to do, is it something that you are able to do? Is it something that you think that you have the abilities and the skills to really go out into the world and put yourself out there? Well, from my standpoint, the only way to find that out, would be to go to college, right? But as part of the curriculum, you know, what college has a radio station? I mean, you know, the part of college is to prepare yourself for your life, for your career. Well, I felt that I was doing that from an educational standpoint. I was going to get a liberal arts education, which I was able to get a wide variety of courses. Everybody, of course, you know, has a major, but at a liberal arts college, you actually are are required to take a variety of courses. So this way you're very well-rounded. So you take things in literature and arts and finance and history and cultures and governments and things like that. So this way you get a very well-rounded liberal arts, meaning liberal, meaning many, kind of disciplines, and you're exposed to different things. Because my view was, if I want to be in the media, whether I'm going to be a reporter or a radio personality or whatever it's going to be, you need to know a lot about a lot. Or at the very least, you know a little about a lot. The more that you know on a variety of subjects, the more valuable you can become, because you can comment or at least add to a conversation with your experience or your own knowledge and bring that knowledge to whatever that breaking story might be or whatever topic that might be. If you've got something that you personally know about it or you've personally experienced it, well, that makes it all the more interesting and engaging to a listener. So that was kind of my game plan. And while I was looking at some of the more prominent schools in the Chicago area that also had radio stations, when I was doing my research, what I learned was that a lot of them, because at that time, as I said, this is 35, 40 years ago. This is a long time ago. And, radio was a whole different medium. It was one of the top three. There was only three major medias: television, newspapers, and radio. And it was very competitive, and it was very prominent, and it was very relied upon. It was prestigious. It wasn't easy. Now, that's very different than today. Those three things, newspapers, radios, and television, they're still around, but they're all, kind of on life support. And the internet completely changed. You can use a lot of different words. Revolutionized. For some people, it was revolutionized in their view. For other peoples, it was destroyed, killed, certainly diluted, certainly disrupted. At the very least, the internet disrupted the entire media world and how it worked and its prominence. And today we see that these legacy media companies are struggling because with all the different options and the immediacy and the access that the average person has to information today, I was talking before about, validating or confirming news. Well, now it's on us. There used to be a system and a structure that did that for us. Now we have to become, as I said before, our own mini editors, because the entire game has changed. And there were, in a city, there were X amount of TV stations, X amount of radio stations, and that was it. And you either got in there or you didn't. Well, today, it doesn't take anything. Anybody can buy the equipment for a couple $100 and start their own podcast. And they do. And some get big, they grow into major things. I mean, today we see how the podcast world is basically dominated, not surprisingly, now by celebrities. They ultimately take over everything, established big name celebrities. Podcasts themselves started as kind of a little hobby, a little fun little thing to do. But now the podcast world has pretty much overcome the established radio world. It's a whole, social media and podcasts have changed everything. Now, some will argue that it's democratized things. You say, Jim, you're saying how difficult and how competitive it was, and you needed to really work your butt off to get in. Well, now anybody could do it. Well, I guess that's true. But then just because anybody's doing it, are they really doing it? Are they making money on it? Are they making a living on it? Are they really doing something, or are they just talking themselves? I mean, who knows? That's still an argument there. It's very diluted. It's all very, as I said before, there's no more big three this or big three that, or there's no, paper of record or news or TV station that's dominant, or or, like I said, a newspaper of record like the New York Times or the Washington Post, those are struggling and dying. So it's a whole different world. But back then, you know, it was very competitive, and it was a very lucrative, well, I don't know how lucrative it was, but it was certainly a very popular area to get into. And obviously, it's a very popular and fun area to get into because everybody's doing now on their own with podcasts, right? So I wasn't stupid. I knew, you know, it was an appealing, fun thing. It was a big risk, though. It was because there was no guarantees unless you had somebody paving your way for you, which I didn't. I mean, I just had to get out there and knock on doors. I didn't have anybody opening any doors for me, and so. That's a whole different experience. Today, as I said, you can buy the equipment and say, hey, it's Tom's podcast, and you're off to the races. So, but back then, as I was talking, you know, to get onto a college radio station was not easy. Yes, you went to the college, and yes, you paid your tuition, but, you know, you had to try out for the radio station, and then even, you know, there was such a demand for people wanting to get on the radio stations at these colleges, small as well as big, that there was a whole kind of process and whole structure involved. And in some cases, at some of the bigger schools, there was such a demand that even if you auditioned for the radio station and you were accepted, at a lot of the places, there were no guarantees that you'd even get an air shift until maybe your sophomore year. So you'd have to work at the radio station and do different jobs, but you really, there was no guarantees that you'd get on the radio station and be on the air and learning it and doing it, speaking on the radio to the public. Whether it went, you know, was a huge, you know, covered a big coverage area or whatever, the idea of clicking on a microphone and talking into it and have people listening to it, that's an ability. That's a talent. And you say, well, everybody does it today. Well, I don't know. Is everybody that good at it? As I said many times, the standard now has certainly been lowered since everybody and their mother, now is a member of the podcast or media world in some way, it seems. But back then there were rules and there were processes and it was not easy. And so the reason I went to Elmhurst College once again was that the research that I did was that there wasn't anything. If you auditioned and you were good enough, since it was a smaller college, you could get an air shift and be on the air. And so from my standpoint, I was like, you know, I think I want to do this. I think I'd be good at it. I'm always getting in trouble in grammar school and high school for talking too much. So I think this could be a career for me if I could find a way and find my way in. You know, I've been talking for most of my life, so why not make a living at it? They always say, do what you love, and it's not a job. So, hey, I've been talking since I was a little kid, getting in trouble for it too. So I might as well flip that and now get paid for it, right? So I didn't want to go through that waiting period. I wanted to say, because, you know, I'm very impatient. And so I was like, look, I want to find out if I have the ability to do that. I think I do, but I don't know for sure until I do it. And is it something that now that I'm just listening to the radio as a listener, as a little kid, always listened to the radio. I've been listening to it since I can't remember, music and everything else. It sounds fun. It sounds glamorous. It sounds cool to be able to do that. But I don't know, what's it like behind the curtain? And so this would give me at least a little sense of what were things like to put on a radio show, to be on the radio. You're hearing it as a listener. Now, what's it like to be a presenter, to be a performer on the radio? And I didn't want to wait to see if I could do that, or not only if I could do it, but if I wanted to do it. Is it something that, well, this is, I feel comfortable in this atmosphere. I feel comfortable in this environment. Yeah, I could see myself doing this. You know, once again, that's what the early part of your life and your career is about. It's trying different things, finding, sometimes you know, it's something that you would never expect that you like, that people wind up saying, I never had this in mind, and they become very successful in it. It's always trying things. But I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to wait till I was a sophomore and waste my whole freshman year. You're not being on the air. And so when I was doing my research, I saw that, yeah, you know, if you go to Elmhurst College, if you're accepted, you can get a slot. So ultimately, the lure of the kind of more intimate, I didn't really want to go to a big school. You know, I went to a Catholic high school, a private, you know, Catholic high school, St. Pat's in Chicago. Our classes had maybe 30 people. I went to, you know, Catholic grammar school. We had 30 people. I didn't have like 40 or 50 people in a class. And so the thought of just of a learning situation, of going to a big university and sitting in a big auditorium with hundreds of people, I didn't know if that would be something that I'd really enjoy. I enjoyed talking to the professors, my teachers, having, you know, a relationship with them, having some kind of a chemistry with them. And I just felt that if I went to a big school, I don't know if I'd be able to keep that kind of more interpersonal contact. So I liked the idea that the school was smaller, was manageable. I liked the fact that it had a liberal arts curriculum, so I could learn a little about a lot. And I liked the fact that it had a radio station, which if I was good enough, I could get on right away. And so freshman year, first day, I went to the radio station and they had auditions. And I went and I did an audition and I got on. And I had a air shift for the next 4 years from literally my first day at school at Elmhurst College, Elmhurst University. I was on the radio station at WRSE-FM. And as I said, I can't tell you the fun that I had this is my point. I fell in love with being on the radio the first day I did. Well, even when I went to the audition, I was like, I felt so in my element. You know, I had to do a little audition of, you know, introducing records. I had to pick my own songs. And I think one of the songs I picked was a Warren Zevon song. I can't remember which song. Maybe it was Lawyers, Guns, and Money or Accidentally Like a Martyr. But I know I had to pick like two or three songs and introduce them. And one of those was Warren Zevon. And I remember I was talking to the program director at the time at the station, who was a couple, 3 years older, and said, you know, the fact that you picked the Warren Zevon song, in my mind, that was cool enough. Thank you, Warren. Enjoy every sandwich. And I am, thanks to you. But so I was literally on for 4 years. And even after I graduated, I was on during that summer because it was so hard for me to leave. I enjoyed doing that so much, and I was sending out tapes and everything, you know, and sending out auditions and that at radio stations, not only in the Chicago area, but, you know, throughout the country. But so I was even there a little longer, and I held several different little, you know, positions there. I was the program director for a while. I was the news director. I did news. The first thing I did was news as well as hosting a show. But so I got that background in as well. So I got to learn what it was like to rip the news from the UPI machine and read it and put together a newscast of interesting stories and weather and sports and how you produce that and you put that all together. And then I got my own show on a weekly basis. I used to have a show on every Sunday between 6 and 9 at WRSE in the early 80s. And I felt that was a cool time. Because, you know, it's like Sunday night is a cool time to chill, right? You know, between 6 and 9, you're getting ready, especially, you know, I'm looking at it from a peer group. You know, we got to get ready for school the next day, right? We had the weekend and, you know, Friday you're going out, Saturday you're going out, you're going to listen to a radio station. But I figured, you know, here's a small station that went to about a 10 or 12 mile radius in the western suburbs out of Elmhurst. And I'm like, you know, on a Sunday night, that's a good night. People have, now they might be doing homework, but they're probably home. You know, they're not out and about. It's Sunday night. They're going to go to school or work tomorrow. So that might be a good time for people to be home. And And so they could listen to me on the radio. And that turned out to be a pretty smart move as well. I used to have a nice, you know, following because people were kind of just chilling and listening to the radio. And I was on, you know, 6 to 9 every day or every Sunday, once a week. And man, I put so much effort into that show during the week to produce it and production values and little different tapes and different ideas and bits. I just didn't play music. I was trying, once again, I was using it as a training ground. What was I good at? What wasn't I good at? What did I enjoy? What didn't I enjoy? I got a chance to throw it all out there and see what worked from an audience response and what worked from my own comfort level, so that I was able to at least in some way, after 4 years, realize that I enjoyed working there and or doing that, B, felt that I was good at it and confident that I was good at it to make it my living. And I was able to develop whatever style that I might have those early days at that station every week for 4 years. And a lot of times I'd fill in for people, so I was even there more than that. But the atmosphere, the people that I met, the people that I worked with, the work ethic, the creativity that it helped inspire, this partnership and this friendship with Mick Kaler that I still have 35, 40 years later today. We would do these events, got our name out there. You know, it was this idea of how to deal with the public, how to appeal to the public in a personal way, as well as on the radio. I'm sure that had something to do with later on my acting ability. I never was at the theater, and I never was involved in theater at both in high school or college. Never. But I've been always out and about talking to the public, doing public speaking, and certainly being on the radio, being and performing in front of people in one way or the other for as long as I can remember. But there's no question the experience and the confidence that I gained working at WRSE FM, 88.7 FM at Elmhurst College, now later known as Elmhurst University. And so to hear that station that has had a very proud history, as I said, and I'm sure that there's been other people in the last 30 or 40 years that went to Elmhurst that also have had radio careers. I'm not as aware of many of those. I'm sure that there are people that are doing radio here in Chicago or around the country that worked at Elmhurst. But the sad part is that now, wow, what a difference. For the college to not renew its license or cancel its license, that's a very telling tale about the state of radio today and the state of media today, as I said. I mean, from my standpoint, that radio station was a major reason, and it was a major amenity and a major course offering, because it really was kind of an extracurricular activity, a main reason why I went to Elmhurst College. One of the main reasons. And now that's not there. And maybe, I mean, I look at it and say, geez, couldn't they have, I mean, why would you get rid of that? But perhaps in a realistic looking at things in terms of expenses and realism in the real world today in 2026, are people really training to go on the radio like they used to? Is radio itself a true career destination when podcasts and social media are dominating and major radio stations are going out of business? CBS News Radio, CBS National Radio. It's not BBM, AM, or FM here in Chicago. They're still on. Yes, they're not even owned by CBS anymore. They always were, but they're not anymore. That station's still on. A lot of people got confused by that. CBS News Radio closed down, but that was a nationally syndicated news service. BBM, FM, and BBM, AM here in Chicago, the news radio station, it's still on. So don't let people tell you that it isn't. It's still there. But my point is, radio was a career destination and it was a popular one, and it could be lucrative if you were successful in it, like every other thing. But today, the radio world is very different. I've talked about it many times on this podcast. You know, it's very diluted. It's very niche-y now. Younger people don't really listen to the radio. They're listening to podcasts. They're listening to, whatever they listen to musically, their music, streaming services. Radio exists. It's there. It's got a very strong audience, very loyal audience, but it's certainly not as big and as prominent and as influential as it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, or certainly, almost 100 years ago. So it's a different world. So I was sad to see that the college radio station has shut down. And I wish there was some way that it could have been saved. But I guess from a very realistic standpoint, you know me, I'm a realist. It's probably not a crazy move because I don't know what kind of numbers they had. Were they having problems even getting younger people to go to the radio station? Maybe they couldn't even put it on anymore because people just, like I said, when I talk to people in their 30s and 20s and even 40s, they don't listen to the radio. They're doing their own thing with their own different, I got this podcast, I got this streaming service. Radio is not really on their radar screens unless they listen because of their parents. But, so I can sort of see it, but it's just sad anyway. And what's so exciting from my memories of WRSC, and in addition to the people that I met and worked with and the experience that I got, what was actually very cool, while I was there in the early to mid-80s, an interesting thing happened. It was a music station. I used to do some bits and stuff like that, but I still was heavily a music show. And what was interesting at that time was music was shifting. And then technology was shifting, of course, with the introduction of MTV in 1981. And that was right around the time when it was a couple of years before I started there. But, I mean, it was right in the heyday. And so there was a musical shift going on. We just had the big disco and rock battle in the late 70s. But while that was going on, there was things going around, like in England, there was the punk scene and the new wave scene was emerging. And there was something called import albums. People of a certain age will know that line. That because, there were the big record. I mean, today, what is a big record company? Nobody even knows what a record company is anymore. Everybody's putting their stuff out online by themselves. The music business completely changed because of technology and Napster and the Apple Store and digital music and digital files and things like that. But, there were the big TV, radio and newspapers, there were the big record companies who controlled everything. And so they had the artists that they pushed. And meanwhile, there were these underground music and these underground bands. It's the beginning of kind of the alt rock that got big in the 90s. But this whole idea of underground music and import music from England and different countries was beginning to become a kind of a musical niche, but it was gaining popularity. And then because of MTV, MTV solidified it and gave it a home and made it the mainstream. But in the late 70s and early 80s, there was this music that people were getting into and these bands that people were getting into, but they were not the ones that were signed to major record labels. They were not the ones whose songs were being heard on all the major radio stations. So there were some rock bands and some kind of new wave and underground punkish bands and rock bands that were getting a lot of hip cult status because people were in a radio station like WXRT here in Chicago were playing them, but they didn't have a big, prominent profile at that time too. There was a time when WXRT was not even on the air 24 hours. Can you believe that? I remember that. They used to go off at sundown, okay? I know I sound like I'm 500 years old, but it's true. But there was this popularity of this kind of underground music, like Talking Heads and and other bands like that that weren't getting on the radio. You know, even David Bowie, aside from big hits, you know, it wasn't like you were hearing Scary Monsters on you know, the Loop or W or LS and things like that. You weren't hearing the deep cuts. It was mostly FM radio, but you were still hearing the top 40 stuff. And so that's where WXRT made its niche, and it grew. But there was this underground thing where it was people listening to records and sharing records with people, but they couldn't hear it anywhere. They were hearing it at home, but they couldn't really hear it on the radio. And that's where college radio in the late 70s and mid to early 80s really got a brief moment of real power and prominence, because it was people like me in my age who were 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old who was into this kind of music, who was listening to this kind of music. I wasn't hearing it on the main radio stations, but I was playing it at home and all of my friends, and we liked them. We saw these bands in concert, but we had no place to really hear it. And so when I got that radio show at WRSE, FM, 88.7 FM. Good morning, everybody. I was playing this music. Like I said, Warren Zevon. Where would you hear, you know, aside from Werewolves of London, Warren Zevon wasn't played on any kind of major radio station. So these kind of, these cult status bands that a lot of people liked, but they weren't breaking through in the mainstream. And that's where the big radio stations played. And so college radio stations in the late 70s and early 80s to mid 80s actually had some pull. If you look at any history of the band REM, there will be a mention of the popularity on college radio stations. And I was certainly a very early, in fact, I saw them play at Park West. I saw them play at a somewhere at Northwestern University when they were first starting in the early 80s. I mean, you know. But my point is, I was an early REM fan. They weren't getting played anywhere on the radio. But they were getting played on my radio show. And college, so then the record company started to go, well, you know what? You know, there's this little cult world of college radio that have these free form, they don't have strict formats. The kids are choosing what records they want to play, and they're playing them all. So let's tailor things to them. And so there were a lot of indie bands in the early 80s that could attribute some of their breakthrough success to the initial popularity and the initial airplay that they got on college radio stations. I would think REM is probably the best example of a band that grew to international prominence. And back in those days, before there was file sharing, it was college radio. It was people like me, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who had their own radio shows on small college radio stations all over the country that were playing these unknown bands that were good and cool and hip, and we wanted to let everyone know how cool and hip they were, and through connection, how cool and hip we were, because we knew who they were, right? But yeah, there were several bands that could be attributed to their initial breakthrough of getting that big record deal. A band like the Bodines, which is still around today, not in the same lineup, but big, you know, from Waukesha, Wisconsin, the Bodines. But yeah, REM, I would say, if you talk to Michael Stipe or Peter Buck or Michael Mills or any of the main people, they would tell you that the support they got from college radio in the early 80s was key. Bands like U2, all these British bands, you know, Human League, which became a huge hit. It was that new wave, you know, these import albums that we were buying and getting and playing on our college radio. And then when MTV hit, they were then validating it. It wasn't until about the mid 80s until commercial radio finally started to play the songs that were getting the popularity on MTV. It took the mainstream radio stations a couple of years to really get the fact that they weren't tapping into where the people were. But before even that, I mean, it was almost a perfect synergy of MTV and college radio helped break a lot of bands that never probably would have at some point, because they weren't getting the airplay on the major commercial mainstream stations, but they were getting that on college radio. So I'm very proud and happy to say that during my tenure there, those 4 years there, I was playing some of the cool music that later on proved to be the big music that everybody else started listening to. But I was playing that stuff before anybody else was. And actually, college radio had some validity to it. It had some impact. It had some influence. And during my time there, I was there. So I'm very grateful for the time that I was there. Those 4 years, it wasn't just a training ground and learning, but it was also actually helping to push the culture in a way. It was the popularity and it was the cult status and the airplay that a lot of these bands were getting that led to their popularity, led to them getting more notoriety, getting them to perhaps, you know, get on an independent record label. There was a, like, REM first was on IRS Records before they got onto Warner Brothers and things like that. These were small indie kind of things, and it was the power and the passion of the college radio time during the early 80s that broke a lot of the bands that became, as I said before, internationally, you know, rock Hall of Fame bands. Yeah, like Talking Heads, REM, U2, you name it. You know, as I said, a lot of the British bands, you know, the synthesizer bands, The Cure. Oh, my God. Nobody was playing The Cure at all on a major radio station. But my gosh, were the people that listened to WRSE and the people that listened to my show, I mean, they wanted to hear The Cure all the time. It was a mix of high school and college kids. There were some really hip, cool high school kids that were into this music, and then the college kids. And that was kind of our base of who our listeners were. And yeah, like I said, I remember, my gosh, getting requests for The Cure all the time. And then all of a sudden you were starting to see those bands that, you know, like say in the early 80s that we were just playing, suddenly they were appearing on MTV, and suddenly they were appearing on WLS and on The Loop, and then they were getting real prominence on WXRT. And yeah, look it up. College radio in the 80s. I'm not just hyping that. That was a real thing, and I'm proud to have been a part of that, and that is also a part of my WRSE experience. And so it's a sad, nostalgic kind of thing. I'm proud of the work I did there. I'm glad I had that experience. I will always have great memories of WRSE. While it's sad that that the radio station at Elmhurst College is closing, or has closed, I think it's also a sign of the times. You know, there's a point where, you know, you just don't need a buggy whip anymore. And maybe Elmhurst College is kind of ahead of the curve to say, you know what, we have to start to realize, and we've got X amount of funds, and we're not getting the participation, and we're not really getting the interest. And really, is there a career path for that? I know when I was there, there was. And I know when I was at WRSE, 88.7 FM, there was a career path. There was a vitality. There was a fun. There was an experience. And now it's a great memory. And so I'm very fortunate and very touched the fact that I was a part of the history of that station, along with some of those other people that I said, Terry Hemmert, Patty Martin, Tom Tuber, Dave Wills, Mick Kaler, many others, I'm sure. Those are some of the ones that I'm aware of. It's always good to be able to get experience earlier in your life and see what you want to be. As I look back at my life now, as a much older person, I look back at that time and I say, that was a good decision I made in terms of following the path that I wanted to do. I had a strategy and I was able to execute it. And WRSE certainly played a major role in giving me the experience, giving me the insight, and giving me the confidence, and allowing me to experiment and find my style and find my voice. And I wouldn't have been able to find that, I don't think, any other place, because it was a very free-form format. It wasn't tightly formatted. A lot of college radio stations are tightly formatted. You can't say this. You don't get to talk. No, no. In my view, what was so great about WRSC is that it was a training ground. It was meant for the student to say, just as I'm going to find out if I can be a good accountant, I'm going to try different things, then this place is a good training ground for me. And so I'm grateful for the experience and the memory and the time that I spent at WRSC 88.7 FM. The Jim Toronto Show, every Sunday from 6 to 9. Hopefully there's some of you out there that may have remembered it. It will always be a memory of mine. Sorry to see it go, but it was around for more than 64 years. It gave a lot of people a lot of fun and experience, and it gave a lot of people a chance to make a career of what they loved. And I'd like to think that I'm part of that tradition. Sorry to see you go, WRSC, but glad that you were around. WRSC 88.7 FM, Elmhurst College. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And of course, you should get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 523. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of my mind to your ears. Jim Toronto here at WRSC 88.7 FM, Elmhurst College.